Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast, and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for keeping the faith with the show. Thank you for coming back to it time and time again. And thank you for telling your friends, passing on the word about this. So many people telling me that a friend told them about The Unexplained, and then they got hooked and started listening. So please pass the word on, because we're a little cottage industry here. We're very, very small. We're not a corporation or any kind of big enterprise. There's only me here. And the only way we can get the word out about this is for you to spread it online or tell your friends about it. Just call them up and tell them about this show called The Unexplained, and maybe you think they'll be interested in it, and that's great. Thank you very much for the emails that are still coming in, by the way. If you want to give me feedback about the show, what you think about it, how you think we can improve it, guests we can maybe talk to in future, go to the website now, designed by Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv. There you can leave a donation for the show to help this work continue, expand, and develop, and also a message for me. I'm very grateful to you for all the support you've given to me in recent months. Now, this show is going to be quite different from ones that we've done recently. We're going to take very much a walk on the wild side this time, and we're going to talk about miracles. Maybe there's been a time in your life, certainly recently in mine, with this hearing difficulty that I've had to contend with over the last couple of months, where I've kind of sat back and I've thought, what I need right now is a miracle. Whether we reach into ourselves for some kind of resource, or whether, as I do, we look outside. We're not entirely sure what we're looking to when we look outside. Maybe you are. But we're looking for some kind of facility, some kind of assistance, some kind of help. And I have to say, in my life, sometimes it's come. So we're going to be talking with a lady in America called Cherie Dillard about the Miracle Workers Handbook. Now, Cherie is a medium, I guess you call her, but has a really fascinating take on miracles and how to get change within your life. Maybe that's not being fair to her, but we'll talk to her in just a second when we connect with her. And we've had this process ongoing in the UK that reflects a great deal on public life and politicians. It's called the Leveson Inquiry. If you're in the UK, you may well be bored with it already. It's been going on for months. It's an inquiry, a judicial inquiry, into the standards of the media, prompted by the dirty dealings of some of the tabloid press and others, by hacking into mobile phones, cell phones, and getting data and dirt on people and information about people to get stories, and the various ways that the media interfaces with people in public life and politicians for good or bad in the quest for information, which supposedly we all want. Well, we've had a whole variety of people up in front of this affair over the last few months. I interviewed Alistair Campbell, who used to be Tony Blair's press man when Tony Blair was the Prime Minister of this country. Alistair Campbell, very forceful figure, and didn't take very kindly when I asked him what he felt about this circus called the Leveson Inquiry, and he put me in my place well and truly. He doesn't think it's a circus. He believes it is performing a vital function. Me? I'm not sure. It's interesting, isn't it, to hear the contradictory views of various politicians, Gordon Brown contradicting Rupert Murdoch, and then we've heard the views of former Prime Minister John Major, we've heard Hugh Grant on the stand, various entertainers and celebrities on the stand there, and as I record these words, we're just digesting what David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, has had to say. We've had a lot of heat at the Leveson Inquiry, but I wonder at the end of the day, if there's going to be much light, is it really a surprise that those in power have dealings with the media of various kinds, and that the media use all kinds of methods and have traditionally to get their stories? Now, some of this is good and in the public interest, and some of these methods are to be condemned. But whether it's worth spending tens of millions of pounds on an inquiry like this to supposedly take us forward to a new way of regulating the press, the media, in this country, I'm not sure. But I watch it with interest just to see these people contradict each other quite a lot. Which is, by the by, but just an interesting sidelight on the way that life is being conducted here in the UK. And meanwhile, we have all kinds of financial problems going on in the Eurozone and elsewhere that I guess we'll reflect upon at a later date here. I'm trying to get hold of Gerald Celente, American finance watcher here to come on again, because I find what he has to say fascinating, and I know you do too. All right, let's talk about miracles now. Let's cross to the United States, and we'll get on Cherie Dillard there, the author of The Miracle Worker's Handbook. Cherie, thank you for coming on The Unexplained.
Thank you for having me.
A great pleasure to talk with you. And I had a, this is one of those shows, you know, I had a feeling that it would be a good one. And I don't know where that feeling came from, but I felt very comfortable about it. You know, whenever you do a broadcast live or you do a recording like this one, usually I think most of us who do this professionally, you know, you get a little psyched up for it. And I felt very relaxed about this one. So I don't know whether it's the day here because it's slightly bright here in London for a change, or whether it's you and this connection, but I'm very calm about it. Hope you are.
I feel, yeah, I'm excited, but calm too at the same time.
All right, I've read a little bit about you biographically, and one of the descriptions is medium. Is that right?
That is correct, yes.
And how do you know that you're a medium? I've talked to many mediums over the years, and the answer to that question has always been different. So how do you know that you are?
Well, I know I am because people tell me I am, to be honest with you. And I say that because it's one thing to feel as if you're communicating, connecting to some with someone on the other side. And it's another to have people, you know, to have sessions with people, and they say to you, oh, well, that is absolutely correct. That is my father. That is my mother. He liked vintage cars. He was that tall. He did have that color hair. That is his name. You know, that kind of thing where enough evidence over time. And to be honest with you, you know, I've been doing this for so long. When I first began, I kind of didn't believe it either. I thought, you know, I'm getting these impressions. I'm seeing these things. I'm hearing these things. But for all I know, this is kind of all gibberish. And it was really people encouraging and wanting me to, you know, pay me to tell them more and more because they really knew in their, you know, because they knew their parent or they knew their loved one that I was connecting with someone. So.
And it's very important for a lot of people, isn't it? They want reassurance. They want to know that the person who's passed over is okay.
Yeah, they really do. And what I've been finding over time is that this is one of the things that just recently I've kind of had those aha moments is I'm really beginning to realize the depth of our connection with the other side. And I mean that because it's you know, people connect because they want to know that. They want to know, is my loved one still alive? Will I see them again? How are they? How did they, you know, do on their way over? Did they make it? But yet the kind of information that I, when I look back at the readings, it's kind of deepening in that we're becoming, I feel, you know, with, you know, I think that the world is getting smaller in a way with the internet and, you know, global ability to communicate and all, but it's also getting kind of wider and deeper in the way that our connection with the other side, the unseen, the spiritual realms, the unknown, is actually deepening.
Now, isn't that interesting? Because you might have thought that with all this technology, we would kind of think ourselves as being too cool for school, too smart for all of this.
Right, yeah.
But
well,
that's not the case.
Huh? I think that it's kind of just consciousness expanding, you know? I think it's bigger than even intent. I feel like it's just energy moving into those realms more and more. You know, we see it on TV. It's becoming so commonplace right now. And so I think our connections with the other side are also, in my experience anyway, they're getting stronger. They're getting more intense.
So if, for example, I was in America and I came to see you and I said, look, my mom, right. which she did, my dear mother, passed right. 6 years ago. And I've never tried to make contact with her. I believe that we had a couple of communications not long after she died, and now I feel she's gone to another place, but it's all okay. But I don't feel that closeness anymore. I think she's gone somewhere else. But if I come to you, say I'd come to you now, you know, not that I'm going to do that, don't worry, and asked you to connect with my mum, could you do that? Would you be confident that you would be able to do that to order?
You know, I have had a few times where, and it's rare for people not to come in that you would like to talk to. But normally, if people, whoever they want to connect, they will come forward. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great. So that kind of establishes your credentials. Now, we're here to talk about this Miracle Workers Handbook. And the title intrigued me. As soon as I saw that on an email, I thought, I have to do this. Because most of us, I think, would like to make things better or change things or know how to be able to do that, the mechanic to be able to do that. So there's a lot in your book. It's 252 pages long or thereabouts. But, you know, how does that happen? How can you make things change?
Well, the premise of the book and my belief system in this is that it is all consciousness, and consciousness is fluid. We can affect it. And one of the reasons that I wrote the book, and it's about Mary, but it's not about the kind of iconic Catholic Christian Mary that...
This is Mary, the mother of Jesus.
This is Mary, the mother of Jesus, but it's also Mary as divine feminine expression of grace and miracles. And, you know, and that's one of the phenomenons about Mary is that wherever you go, whatever country, nation you're in, there will be people who have had experiences, personal experiences with the miraculous, with Mary. You know, in my feeling, the way I've experienced Mary is that she does embody that grace, which is beyond beyond time, beyond our sense of the concrete, the logical. And when we can tap into that energy, because I feel she is present to us and that we can invoke her energy, then we expand beyond our limitations of the material physical realm.
So do you believe that Mary is the correct way to describe it, is what some people would call an ascended master?
Yes, I believe that's true, although I'll be honest with you. I have a hard time sometimes with understanding some of, like, I would say yes, theoretically, although I'm not always quite sure exactly what that means, but in theory, I would agree with that.
Well, I know some people who believe that they can tap into all sorts of energies and all sorts of beings who haven't necessarily lived here on this plane at any time. Right. Now, Mary's different because Mary, from what we know and what we believe, more importantly, did live here.
Yeah, I think that differentiates her in many ways, that she did live here, correct, yeah.
And so you believe that Mary is a force in the world now, and a force that we can tap into for good and for change and for better. How did you come to that conclusion?
Well, I came to that conclusion through my own personal experiences. I didn't grow up Catholic, and I didn't grow up with Mary as a religious figure. I did go to church, and we were Protestants, and we didn't, you know, Mary was only visible and around Christmas time, you know, with the...
the crib.
You know, yeah, and that was the only time in my childhood religious upbringing that we ever considered Mary. I did have a lot of Catholic friends, and there was a lot of that in my periphery environment, but directly I didn't have that connection with her. My connection with her came a little bit later in my, it wasn't childhood, but then as I got a little older, I began to have a lot of psychic experiences, and I wasn't really looking for it. It was unnerving to me, and I had different things come into my life just spontaneously, synchronicity, that kind of led me to Mary, that helped me to kind of really see that she was in my life, although I didn't understand why. One of the experiences I talk about in the book that really opened the door for me with Mary was, it's a long story, I'll make it very short, is I was helping a woman when I was in college to go to a farm in New York that was going to help her. And she collected these stray cats from New York City. She had no place to live, and this farm was going to take her in and let her six stray cats stay there with her. So I drove her there. And when I got there, at the time I didn't know, but when I got there, it was a Catholic worker farm. the Catholic worker farm is, it wasn't connected with the church, but it was a group of people that got together that basically, you know, tried to feed, help the homeless and that kind of thing. But they were very, very connected to Mary. They had, you know, mass every morning, and they prayed to Mary, and Mary's picture was all over. And it was kind of getting to me in a way, because I didn't really have a connection with Mary. I love the people there, and I didn't understand Mary, why they were so devoted to her. And at the same time, I was having a lot of psychic experiences. When I say psychic experiences, I mean really things that were unnerving to me. And one day I was out on the farm, I was helping with tomato plants, and I said, okay, I've had it. If Mary, if you are real, if there really is a being out there, Mary, by the end of the day, I would like to have a wooden cross. By sunset, I'll have a wooden cross. You'll bring me a wooden crucifix, something like that. And that way, you know, I was kind of testing her. Prove to me that you exist. And then I thought, I just let it go. I kind of got busy. I didn't think about it. And then that day, right about sunset, I lived in a little cabin in the woods. One of the other volunteers came to the door, knocked on the door. He had a box of things. He said, well, I'm leaving. I'm going back home. And he pulled out a wooden cross, a crucifix, and he said, I thought you might like this. And I thought, oh, gosh, okay. Well, that's a lot of synchronicity there. That's a little bit of a coincidence that I get a cross right at sunset, and it is wooden. Because I remember when I asked for it, I thought, you know, it's real easy to bring me maybe a different kind of cross, but I don't see a lot of wooden ones. So
no, you see a lot of tin or metal crosses,
that's
crucifixes.
Specifically why I said wooden.
But the idea of a wooden cross. Now, look, I've got a lot of skeptical listeners. They will say, all right, possibly coincidence, possibly exactly what you think it is, or possibly we have more power within us than we're aware of. In other words, if we program for a thing in our heads, then, as I've seen sometimes in my life, we tend to get it.
Right. Well, I think that they're all in the same, everything you said, though, is that, you know, coincidence, programming in our head, we're all invoking energy. I don't think that Mary is necessarily, I believe her to be energy, and I believe that she is a being, but when I say invoking her presence, I also mean invoking that presence within us that is vibrationally connected to her vibration, which is that vibration of grace and miracles. So to me, that line is very, very thin. I don't look at her as a being necessarily in time and space that's separate from you and I.
Okay, so this instance where you got the wooden cross that you'd wanted by the end of the day,
right,
proved to you something. What did it prove?
Well, what happened, I remember very clearly, is I knew I had a choice at that time. I could look at it as coincidence. I could look at it, now isn't that interesting? I could look at it as, like what you said, I brought this to myself. Or I thought I can actually open myself completely and surrender to this, whatever this is. And that option to me was the most exciting option, was to kind of let go into something unknown that seemed to be beyond my comprehension and to allow that path to open for me. And that's what I did at that time. I didn't understand it, but I thought, given my options, that one seemed the most compelling to
me. So you say that you felt you could allow the path to open. Does that mean that you felt at that point, okay, I've done this, let's see if I can do something more significant? Is that what you did?
Well, it wasn't just me doing it. It was more, let me surrender to this and see where I'm led. Let me surrender to this completely and see what happens next.
So this event was a door opening?
It was a door opening, correct, yes.
What happened next?
Well, what happened next was, I'm going to fast forward a little bit. I actually ended up going to Guatemala and northern Mexico. Southern Mexico in the mountains, and working in the Mayan Indian villages, putting in water systems. And it was so incredible to me because I was in the middle of, a lot of Mayan culture. villages that we had to hike in for some of them, you know, it took a day or two to hike in. There were no roads, no running water, no electricity. And yet we would be walking for miles, hours, in the middle of nowhere, and we'd come across Guadalupe statues or, you know, painted boards with Guadalupe prayers written on it. And the Mayans had incorporated Guadalupe, which is the Latin American version of Mary, very much into their culture, spiritual culture. And I spent a lot of time with the women because it was at that time, you know, the men were the workers and the women, they didn't always accept me as a worker, but it was fine in some ways because I learned a lot being with the women. But being with the women in that culture, I really realized I saw a very different version of Mary as opposed to what I saw growing up. This Mary was very intertwined with the day-to-day things of life, the garden, the, you know, babies, children. She was like one of the women there. She was the earth, the giver.
A kind of guardian angel for them, do you think?
She really was, but she's very earth-based at the same time, you know? We look at angelic, at least, you know, in my little community here, more, you know, outside of us coming from the divine. This was more from the earth, you know? It was more, and that was the interesting thing, it was based more in the Mayan culture, so it was more coming from the depths as opposed to coming down from the heavens. And I really liked that Mary. I really liked Guadalupe in that way. And I really knew her in a different way. And then fast forward to that, I came back to the States and began to see people as a counselor, intuitive medium. And there was something in me that if you're ever in my home, you would see I have Mary statues. I've got a lot of connections to Mary visibly. And yet it was funny because it was in my consciousness, but not necessarily something I talked about or could even put words into. And I had a client, a woman who had lost a baby. I take it back. It was about a 2-year-old, a toddler who had drowned. And she's a very sweet woman. And I worked with her for a long time. And she was trying to get pregnant again. She couldn't get pregnant. This was over a course of a couple years. And one morning I said, you know what? I just had to do anything I could do. So I really sat down and I prayed to Mary. Please, I said, if I've acute any points here with the work I've done, I want to just give it to this. And please, please give a baby to this woman. And like within a couple months, she was pregnant. And I thought, wow, well, that's interesting.
Now, was the woman doing anything else? I'm just looking at this scientifically. I mean, it is a great story, but I'm looking at it in a more scientific way. Do you think that she was also using fertility treatment and that kind of thing or not?
She had been using it for, you know, like she tried everything, which is... you know, like I said, we're talking over a couple of years.
But
here.
She came to you when she was, as she felt, at the end of a very long, hard road.
To talk about her son, not even about pregnancy.
Okay.
I never even thought I would help her with that. That was, like I said, that was a spontaneous one morning. Let me try anything I can do to help her. Oh, I know. If I was in Mexico, if I was in Guatemala, we would pray to Mary for this. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to pray to Mary for this.
And what did she think about it? When this thing happened, obviously wonderful thing to happen in her life, but what did she tell you?
I don't think I ever told her I prayed for her.
Mm. Why was that? Why do you think you didn't raise that with her?
No, I think one of our sessions she told me she was pregnant, but I never said, oh, well, I prayed for you. I just was very happy for her.
So for you, this was more quiet confirmation of this power.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's one of the things about coming out with the book, which... has been kind of interesting for a lot of the people that know me, is that I haven't really talked much about Mary. Like I said, she's been more of an inward kind of connection I've had. People have known me more as a psychic, a medium, you know, not necessarily a religious person in that way. So, yeah, I don't think that I ever mentioned it to her that I had prayed.
Okay, so that was another demonstration of this energy, right. this power, this golden light, whatever you want to call it, flowing through you. Where did you take it from there?
From there, I kind of just began to do that more and more with my clients. Is before I do readings, I generally say a short prayer, and I would invoke her presence, her energy in those in the prayer, and I still do that to the, you know, every day. And I began to notice more and more situations similar to that one where people were having whatever it was, whatever situation or issue that they were working with that seemed to be adding to whatever work I was doing with them. And again, I can't really, I'm very fluid with this. I'm more of an observer, I feel. I don't really feel like it's been, okay, I've done this and this has happened. It's been more, isn't this interesting that things begin to shift?
Do you feel that you're a conduit for something? Do you feel that you're a facilitator? In other words, can these people come to you? Do you think that if they prayed to Mary, they could do it themselves?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the wonderful things about Mary is that it does not matter if it doesn't, anybody can. She's so present for everybody. And that's why I feel like she has such global popularity is that you don't even have to be spiritual. You don't have to be religious. You don't have to, there's a lot of spiritual practices that have a lot of training involved and knowledge and awareness. And that's good. I think that, you know, that kind of discipline is a really wonderful.
But even if you don't have to be spiritual particularly, or you don't have to be religious, I presume you have to be well motivated. You can't go asking Mary to intercede and do something that wouldn't be right. You know, if you wanted, your next door neighbor's garage to fall down, right. That trivial, stupid example, but you couldn't ask for that kind of thing.
No, and that's a good point you bring up, because when I say this, I should say too that my belief in this is that you can't really, I mean, you can do it. It's possible. Anybody can do it. But in my experience, even though I brought up an experience of praying for the woman to have a baby, in my experience with Mary's energy, it's not so much give me this as it is
make this right.
Yeah, or just open the grace. It's more about grace. It's more about lift me. It would be more with the garage situation. It would be more perhaps lift me to the awareness and perhaps lift my neighbors to the awareness where we could live in peace and harmony. And I wouldn't want to or need to or feel compelled to want their garage to fall down.
I mean, I was going through your book and the things that you say about this. And I wondered, just in a very personal case in my own life, I'm a broadcaster here, been on the radio for years, and a few months ago I found myself with a virus that's left me with a hearing problem, and at the moment I can't work. This is my labor of love. This is the thing that I do, you know, at home, and I reach the world with this unexplained show. But my news work, for the moment, has had to stop. And I read this, and I thought, and I haven't tried it, I wonder if I should try and ask for help to stop the ringing in the ears and the noises and all the rest of it that I've gone through. But in a personal, and I'm sure, look, this is not about me at all, but there must be people listening to this who've got situations. They think, right, maybe I could apply this to myself. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. No, I think, absolutely. You know, the question I would have too would be, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I suppose you have to get to a stage, and this is a very interesting point. Let's take it away from me particularly, but does a person have to get to a particular stage? Do you have to get to the stage where you are quite literally on your knees and you don't know where to turn?
I think that helps, and it helps because I feel like we allow more grace in that, at that time. If, you know, sometimes when we approach things too skeptically, it also can create a resistance of acceptance within us because we have to accept it. We have to open ourselves and accept whatever grace and energy is available to us.
So do you mean by that ego has to come out of the equation? Once ego is gone, then it's
definitely
easier?
Definitely. But see, this is one of the interesting things about what we're talking about is that when I asked for that wooden cross by the end of the day. I was not asking really in that way of consciousness being completely open to receiving it. I actually didn't really think I would get it. I was more of an experiment for me. And I have done other things like this where it's on, and I don't understand why that is. I do know with Mary, though, it happens. I do know that with Mary, even if there is ego there, even if we are not in that place where we are completely able and open to receive, although obviously it incredibly helps if we are.
You see, I found positive thinking helps, but it doesn't help so much when there is doubt. And you're saying this works, and Mary can intercede for you, if that's the right word, when there is doubt.
But I don't know if she always... I don't understand in what situation... it's a personal connection with her that is very... It's very individual to her. I agree with you completely. Positive thinking... opening, letting go of the ego, receiving, letting go of the doubt and the fear. And you can really feel it when you're open to it. But at the same time, I can also, like I said, give you times and situations where just invoking her presence overrides some of that.
Now, you've done this, and you're doing this, and you will continue to do this, and you've written a book about this.
Right.
What about case studies, people that you've imparted this knowledge to, who've maybe used it themselves, you know, ordinary people, people who are not or don't consider themselves to be mediums? What about them? Do you have examples of people?
You know, that's the really interesting thing about Mary is that, I mean, I have some in my own experience with clients, certainly many. But the interesting thing with Mary is that, you know, because she's been around and in so, you know, so many environments all over the world, there have been a lot of case studies surrounding healings attributed to her, miracles, that there are, you know, just hundreds, thousands of people that will, you know, completely affirm the miracles that she's brought into their lives. You know, the book that I wrote it, I think, in a way for people that are not involved so much in the church and don't have a more of a Christian or Catholic connection with her and can understand her more as perhaps energy and a divine presence in that way.
Because for some people, the religious part of it will be difficult. Look, I mean, I find it easy to accept because I'm from Liverpool, and Liverpool, you may not know this, but is a city that is half Catholic and half Protestant, and my family is divided right down the middle. I used to go and visit for a little bit of solace and a little bit of peace the Catholic Church there, which is a church that was built in 1967, is known all around the world. And occasionally I go into the Church of England one, the Episcopalian one, I suppose you would say, which is older. And, you know, I felt at home in both. They weren't a central part of my life, but they were definitely, and still are, a part of my life. You know what I'm saying? Well, the religious part of it is interesting to me.
Well, no, I agree. You know, what's interesting about my family is that my mother was a Methodist minister, United Methodist Protestant. I've got a brother who's a Protestant minister. My other brother, though, is a PhD in religion, but he's Catholic, and he teaches at the oldest Catholic university here in the United States and is the head of the department of a Catholic school. And so, and here I am more, I guess, you know, if you're going to label me, I guess I'd be more New Age. But I understand it from all those different perspectives, too.
Does the Catholic Church have a problem with any of this? Because when you're talking about Mother Mary, then you're on their turf, you're on their patch. This is their territory.
Oh, I know. And I actually have a problem with the church.
Okay.
It's like, I don't care if you've got a problem with me. I've got a problem with you. Yeah, don't get me started on this one, but this is like, I don't know why it is, but this is such a sensitive trigger for me, is that I really feel like, you know, the church has completely, in so many ways, repressed Mary, put her, you know, in this nice, safe little pure box and have denied people. You know, to me, Mary is the opening, the conduit, that the energy that is about intuition, synchronicity, grace. At the time when of Jesus's birth, women were akin to slaves at that time. They weren't educated, and yet here this, young woman comes along, and no rabbis are told. No one is informed but Mary of the Immaculate or Miraculous Conception. And I think since that point, for me, Mary completely changed the idea of God. For me, Mary changed the idea of God as an outward male presence who was about the synagogues and about war and, power. And God became divine presence within of miracles.
Are you saying here that you think that perhaps organized religion, by relegating, maybe that's a too severe a word to use, but relegating Mary to a subsidiary role where in fact she has enormous power, is a little sexist in a way? Regarded as a male thing. This is male energy. It's nothing to do with women.
I think it's absolutely sexist. Absolutely. I don't think there's any, if you look at the history of the church, I don't think you could deny that it's not been sexist.
I've got a lot of friends who say, and I think a lot of them are right, that if, as a planet and as a society, whatever society we're in, we all tapped more into feminine energy, then we'd all do an awful lot better. And I have to say, I spent most of my working life working more with women than men. First newsroom I ever worked in radio in Liverpool was, there were more females than males and they had senior roles. So, and I found that was a good place. I don't have a problem with that, but I think there are still people who do.
Oh, yeah. I think that's changing. I think that's why Mary is coming in stronger now. I think that's why her presence is, I think more, it's closer. It's more people are feeling it. My feeling is that the divine feminine is becoming stronger. And she, of course, is an aspect of the divine feminine. We're coming more into balance. And, I have nothing against male energy. I really don't. I think the male divine is very, very important. And I think the male divine has helped us with enlightenment. It's helped us with understanding the ego. And it's through that male energy that we've been able, to really work through a lot of the ego, even though the male, it's also, it's all about ego with male energy and both, promoting it, but also being able to move beyond it too. It takes some of that male force to kind of, wrestle with it. Mm. And I think that at this time, I think we've made enough advances in that way that we're allowing more of the divine feminine in. It's a very different kind of feel of energy than the male divine.
The work that you've done, and you wanted to put it down in a book, and you've done that. We said it's 252, 255 pages long, whatever. What do you want to achieve with it? What are you hoping to make happen with this?
Well, I hope that people read it. it all depends on people.
I hope so, too.
I really do. It's funny. I sometimes I think I live too much in my own little world, because since I put it out there, I've been really surprised at the reaction. And I'm so glad to hear the reaction you had, because there is this kind of box that a lot of spiritual-minded people live in, that Mary belongs, is not one of us, Mary is part of the church, and there's a rigid connection with her that, my hope is that people will read it, will be open-minded enough to perhaps perceive a different interpretation of Mary and work with her energy more, because I really feel like we can make such personal and collective shifts with allowing this divine feminine energy through Mary to lift us into that, that grace that she is really is for everybody.
Your research and your work is pretty new to me, I have to say, and that's why we're having this conversation now. As far as you're aware, because you're closer to it than I am, are there other people around the world who are on the same path, on the same track that you are?
With Mary in particular?
Yes, yeah.
Well, you know, that's what's so funny is that, you know, it's all in collective consciousness, because when I wrote this book, it was published in March. And then I think it was in April or May, there was another book put out more in this, a similar, not, I mean, it's very different, the content of it, but it was by an author who also has been working more in the angelic realm and the spiritual way. There's been more books put out by Mary by people outside of traditional religion this year than I have ever seen, which is kind of surprising to me.
And what do you think that means?
Well, like I said, I think she's in collective consciousness. I feel like it's time, there's a shift happening with the divine feminine, and her energy is becoming closer and closer. You know, what's interesting too is that, I don't know, you're in the UK, but I'm sure you've probably heard of Oprah, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I'm sure, hopefully.
Yes, well, I think we all have.
Yeah, you're not that far away, huh?
Oh, no. It's you know, global media now.
Yeah, right. But what's interesting too is that, you know, she and her channel actually has had a reoccurring special about Mary too. And about how Mary is becoming much more visible in the United States than she ever has been. Because, you know, Mary had really been more European in many ways in terms of the sightings and the miracles.
I think this is the right word, the iconography. I mean, you go to any, and, you know, we're family holidays when I was a kid, my mum and I would always go into, if we were in Mallorca or somewhere in Spain or in Italy, wherever we would always go into the church, and there would be usually, even in the smallest, most impoverished little communities in the farthest out-of-the-way places, there would always be a beautiful image of Mary.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
So it is a European thing, I think.
It really is, because you really don't get that in the United States. You really, it's... And that's when you asked me, one of the things, you know, that's what surprised me, is the resistance to her here. And it is shifting. There are and has been more and more kind of sightings and connections with her. But I must have more of a European heart, because even when you said that, it sounds so wonderful to have that presence, which you really don't get so much here like that.
Well, I don't know. I can just... You know, maybe I'm looking back on these things more romantically than I should, but I can remember those holidays, back when we were talking about 30-odd years ago, and going into these places, and, you know, the door would open from the sunlight and you'd be walking into the cool and you would see the most beautiful images, and you would feel, you know, in that place, in that context at that time, very calm.
Right.
I don't think I was aware of any spiritual element to anything. I was on a holiday back then, but I can remember feeling calm and feeling good.
Right. Well, and that's her energy. I had a client in here yesterday who told me that she had been working with the book and working with some of the prayers in there. And she said, but I don't know if it's working, because I just feel so calm all the time.
Well, that's a great, in this day and age, let me tell you, Cherie, I mean, we both know, don't we? That's a great thing to achieve.
Well, maybe she is.
Do you feel tempted in any way? I'm sorry to interrupt. Sorry, carry on.
No, go ahead.
Do you feel tempted in any way to have not an ultimate, but a big demonstration of this power, to make something happen, to make people in America who you say are not as aware of this as we are in Europe, to make them aware? Would you like to stage something, do something?
Oh, gosh. Like, I don't even know what I would do.
Well, you talked about Oprah, and I know that Oprah has have it in the UK, but she has her own channel there.
Yeah, no, she definitely does. I mean, I would love it if that would happen. I would leave it to Mary, though, to kind of open those doors for me.
And what kind of media attention are you getting now? I mean, I literally, all I know about you is that I was sent an email about you, and I just felt that it would be a good thing to do. I don't normally do things in that, I research them a bit more. This was very random for me. I just felt it was the right thing to do, but
I'm so thrilled and happy you did it. It was Mary working with you, my dear. No, I'm really serious. You'd be surprised how things have opened up like that.
That's a lovely thought.
Yeah, you know, I had an interview in print in California and Hawaii, Arizona, And it was one of those kind of spontaneous, it's just kind of funny how things are happening like that. I've had a lot of radio in print, things like that, interviews. It's just, I'm really leaving it to Mary in that way. Whatever opportunities come to me, I accept. And like I said, you know, I'm trying, my work in this is every day I open to her. Every day I make myself available and I really leave it to her. I'm trying to stay out of my own drive, my own ego, my own sense of, well, I've got to make this happen, because I can go there. You know, I certainly have that in me to be driven and work really hard. And I think that's a good quality, to work hard. But
and how does all this stuff, Cherie, integrate with your ordinary day-to-day life?
Well, it's really changed my life. It's one of the things I've realized since I've actually been writing the book and had it put out, is that it's helping me in ways that I never thought it would help me. It's helping me to be in that place every day of just acceptance and presence and feeling her in my life, working through me and working through the people in little things. And that's one of the things I talk about in the book is you know, we judge miracles as these huge happenings and awe-inspiring. How could that possibly be? But it's really what happens within our heart. It's what happens in our mind that is the most important miracle, in that when we are in that place, when we can live in that love, as you know, in this world we're living in, with so much, just every day we're bombarded with fear and, you know, possible destruction and loss and economic problems. To be in that place and to invoke her energy and to have a response by her in that way, where you know that you're loved and you know that life is just opening and responding to whatever it is that you are needing at that time, is a miracle.
Do you believe that anybody getting hold of your book, and perhaps they have a need in their lives, which, you know, most people, there's something that they want, but some needs are more pressing than others. If they use the techniques that you describe, and if they do it with a good heart,
right,
and with good intent, can you guarantee them that something will happen for them?
I can guarantee them something will happen for them. Yes.
That's a big thing to say. You're sure about that?
Well, I'm not guaranteeing that what they want's going to happen.
But you're guaranteeing something will happen.
I'm guaranteeing that they will invoke her energy, and with an open heart, if they're sincere about it, absolutely something will happen. There is no doubt in my mind that something will happen.
So you're saying the right thing will happen, even if it isn't necessarily the thing the person wants. The right thing, the right outcome.
Not necessarily what they're wanting to have happen. I won't guarantee that for a moment. But I will guarantee that they will shift and something will happen, and they will come through it much happier and at peace and enlightened than they were before they read the book.
Well, that's a big proposition, and a good one, sounds to me.
The book shifts people. It really does. If you read the book, you feel her energy and you will shift. That has been the overwhelming response that people have told me about the book, is that something happens and they shift when they invoke her energy and something happens.
Have you had people come to you, you must have, who've been sort of desperate and they've got to a position they thought, you know, I've had it, that's it, you know, and I need some action, I need some movement, I need some change here. Have you had people in that kind of state have their lives changed?
That is my everyday life. That happens every single day, yes.
And what would you say to the hard hearts and skeptics who do listen to what I do? And I'm, you know, happy to have them on board too.
Absolutely.
Who will say this woman is just deluded?
They say I'm what?
Deluded.
Oh. Dude, that's kind. I've heard a lot worse.
Well, let's use deluded for starters.
Thank you for your kindness, I'd say. What would I say? I would say, well, that they have a choice. And it's certainly, if you want to be there, that's fine. I have no problem with people that are skeptical. It's a place where it's a choice to be there. And I honor people that if they're there, if they want to experience something else, though, that door is always open and they're invited in. you know, there's a party happening, and if they want to come in, they can. If they want to stay out, they don't have. I mean, it's certainly it's up to them.
I love that analogy. That's great.
You know, I have to be like this because keep in mind, I have lived with a family who is hardcore religious. And, you know, my brother went to Duke. He went on an academic scholarship. I have a family of scientists, academics, high-level researchers. And so, and I guess that was good growing up like that because it really has helped me in so many ways to be in both worlds. But I have no, you know, yeah, it's fine with me. I don't try to convince anybody, to be honest with you.
All right, you've written this book, which is a distillation of what you've experienced up to now. Are you going to write anything else?
Well, yeah, I definitely, I mean, I've got my other two psychic, I've got my, Discover Your Psychic Type book and Love and Intuition. And absolutely, I love writing. I'm probably going to be writing a book more about working with the other side is where I'm kind of headed right now.
And inevitably, we're all going to die. You know, all our lives come to an end at some point.
Right.
You know, most of us can't predict when or how that will be. What do you think will become of you? What will you become? Will you become pure energy out there somewhere? Well, will you be trying to work down here?
That's a good question. That's a good question. What will happen to me? I think about that a lot, actually, what will happen to me. My hope is that I don't know. I mean, I can only guess what level I'm on. My hope is that when I go over, I will be more energy. Consciousness is my hope. I mean, I believe there's lots of levels we go to. I don't think that there's one, you know, one size fits all when we go over.
That's interesting. And that's a conclusion that I've sort of come to myself with the loss of my mother, like I told you 6 years ago. And I thought because she and I were so close, and in many ways, I'm a lot like her, and we have the same sort of spiritual thoughts about life. I really thought that if one person would be able to go over and communicate with me, then she would be the one. And as time has gone by, I've come to the realization, and I'm not going to know whether I'm completely right in this life, I don't think, that it's not about that. We had our communications. The couple of things happened to me that I think were proof that she was around me in the month or so after she died. But now she's away somewhere. And as you say, there are many different levels. I think she, in this instance, is on a level doing whatever she has to do. And I feel very, very comfortable
about
that.
Yeah, I mean, what I keep getting too is with her is that she's kind of done this here. She would be a little bored to be kind of like hanging out in this vibration. And, you know, she's needing and she's exploring. She's kind of in those higher experiences now and learning. I mean, she has such wonderful energy in that way, you know, wants to learn and experience as much as she can. Don't you feel it? I think I keep getting it would be kind of boring for her here right now.
I'm absolutely sure. I think she'd probably done everything that there was to be done.
He's done it, you know. Why? I mean, why would we want to hang out in elementary school, you know? It's nice to visit and say hello.
I think she's left that part of the equation to me for now.
Uh-huh.
Well, listen, lovely talking with you. Please keep in touch with me. I think you're onto something in my humble view. There will be people who will disagree with this, and I'm sure they'll email me. And if you want to email me and tell me so, then please do so. www.theunexplained.tv. But I've been fascinated by what you've had to say. And the great thing about it, and I think the greatest messages in this world, and having been a journalist for years, you know, I've learned to appreciate these things. The greatest messages are the simple ones. Whether you're a politician or you're a spiritual leader or whatever you are, if you can boil your message down to something simple, you have something powerful. And I think in a way, that's what you've done.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you.
But, you know, that's, as I said, it's only my view.
Well, I think it's a great view. I'm behind you, 100%.
Okay. So you're in the process of writing something else now, are you?
Yes. Well, I'm kind of working with it a little, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
And can you give me a rough idea of what that might be about and how that might
work? Well, like I said, I think it's going to be about our deepening connection with the other side. Like I was saying at the beginning, I feel like the veil is thinning. I feel, and this is my whole philosophy behind kind of 2012, which I know we don't have time to go into, but I believe that we're going through a transformation in energy, and that we're going to be so much more able to connect with the other side, what we call the other side. We'll say the spiritual realms, the unknown, you know, the mysteries, the paranormal, all of that. And the book I'm putting together is talking more about our depth of connection with that, beyond the is it real, is it not, more into what real work can we do together.
So 2012 is significant, even if it isn't the end of the world, which the Mayans didn't even predict.
My feeling about the calendar is that in 2012, with the Mayan calendar, what happened essentially is that we've ascended outside of the physical calendar, and we're in spiritual time right now.
And do you believe there's anything, any truth in this theory that a few people have come up with, but one of them was a radio host who I was a big fan of called Art Bell, in the quickening, in the idea that everything is speeding up in this world?
Oh, absolutely. I like him too. No, in 2012, we entered spiritual time, and that's why the calendar stopped, is because we're recording time right now out of time and space as we've known it. And so time is not the time that we used to have. We're in spiritual time, which means like us, and that's part of the divine feminine coming in, part of Mary's energy coming in. And that's what I'm going to be writing about, is not just is it real, but what is the work that we can now do with spirit? What's the new way of being? That kind of thing. Although, like you said, you got to keep it simple, you know?
Absolutely. And then people, you know, not just a few people, a lot of people take notice when you keep it simple, I think. That's,
right.
Like
right.
I say, that's
so
only my very, very humble
that's
view.
That's the challenge, though, is to kind of take all that and keep it simple, right?
Cherie Delard in North Carolina, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. It's been a very easy conversation to have. Thank you.
It's been great. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And if people want to know about you, you have a website. What is it?
It's www.cherriedillard, cherriedillard.com.
Cherriedillard.com. Cherie, thank you very much. Take care. Stay in touch.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Well, you may well agree, pretty amazing stuff. Cherie Delard in the United States there, and I'll put links to her and her work on my website, www.theunexplained.tv, the website designed, devised, and maintained by Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. Adam, who also gets this show out to you. Thank you very much for being part of the Unexplained family. Please keep your emails coming. I love to get them. Just go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv, and there you can leave me feedback and suggestions about the show. Your guest suggestions always welcome, and maybe a donation to help this work continue. My name is Howard Hughes. You've been listening to The Unexplained, and one thing I can tell you, I'll be back soon.